second half of the People Show here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650, coming to you live from the Kintec Studio. Vic Nizar here with you. If you missed it yesterday, yeah, I'm back. Thank goodness. Brendan Batchelor, the voice of the Canucks, will join us in just a moment. Catching up on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, 650, 650. Oh, I've missed the inbox a great deal. You can chime in on anything. We were touching on a bunch of stuff here, the schedule and everything. Someone texted in, game one on Sunday isn't fair for Vancouver with the Winnipeg travel. Well, Sunday is better than Saturday. One day off in between would have been terrible. 2 days off, I think I can live with. If it started, you know, Tuesday, that's a long wait. I'd worry about the rust coming off in that stage. Nashville obviously have had some chance to sit back and relax, and they'll get to town earlier if it is confirmed against Vancouver. But at that stage, if it starts on Sunday, I'm not that concerned about it as far as the distance from the Winnipeg game. Let's talk about it with Brendan Batchelor, who joins us now. He is the voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. Batch, what's going on?
Good to have you back, Vic. You're like Thatcher Demko. You returned after an absence and were very strong, and it was like you picked up where you left off. So there you go.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'm excited to tomorrow, back on the postgame show. Things will be back to normal officially tomorrow. But we're getting ready. As much as tomorrow's game is going to be fun and listen to the broadcast and everything like that with you and Randeep, it's all building towards something else. Even yesterday, like, I barely referenced the 4-1 win over Calgary yesterday. You know, a bunch of guys score some goals. But to me, it's all building towards Sunday or potentially later in the week. But are you too perturbed by start dates and all that?
Not really. Like, you know, we're going to show up and call the games, and the team's going to show up and play the game regardless of when they decide that it's going to start. It is sounding like Sunday now. Like, Rick Tocchet gave some strong hints to that effect when he spoke with the media today after practice. And I think the only thing that could change that is if, you know, Dallas loses tonight and the Canucks end up winning the conference and it ends up being LA or Vegas. Like, I would imagine all this schedule stuff is now more opponent dependent than anything else. So with the strong likelihood of, I would imagine that that's what they're waiting for before they confirm game one on Sunday. So that's likely what we're heading towards here. And I thought it was interesting that Tocchet talked about the fact that Sunday is actually too soon for him, and he would like another day, you know, after playing Thursday, returning home from Winnipeg. I expect the team will have a day off on Friday. So then it's just one practice on Saturday, and then you're into your first playoff game day on Sunday. So Tocchet kind of sort of hinted at the fact that if he had his way, he would prefer Monday or Tuesday. But I guess we'll have to wait and see how things play out in terms of who they play and when we know who they'll play and when things get confirmed in terms of when the series will get going with game one.
Well, there's probably a sweet spot, and I kind of think Sunday does fit into it because Nashville's just been sitting around since Monday, and so they're relaxing. And the more you push this into Monday or Tuesday next week, the more they get their rest. And Yannick was on the show yesterday, and he kind of mentioned, like, they'll get to town with plenty of time, and they'll fight off the time zone thing. So I almost wonder if it Sunday maybe is the sweet spot even for Vancouver, just to alleviate some of that for Nashville as well.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, on the other side of things, you know, when was the last time a team had a week between games? Like,
sure,
you could have some rust factor for a club if they, you know, don't play in a week. Whereas you played on the Thursday, although we don't know how many of the Canucks are going to play tomorrow night in Winnipeg. That'll be interesting to see as well in terms of who gets rested and those sorts of things. But, you know, Sunday may be the sweet spot. Like, I'm of the mind that we've been waiting so long for this time of the year. We've known for a while officially the Canucks were going to the playoffs. Now we know they've won the division. Let's just get it going. We've all been so starved for playoff hockey in this market for so long that the sooner the better they drop the puck in game one, so that we stop talking about scheduling and when the game might be, and we can just actually talk about the hockey on the ice.
Well, for tomorrow, you know, some speculation of who will get rested and one guy staying behind and all this sort of stuff. I wanted to do this exercise with you. I don't know if you want to go back and forth and draft players here, but of guys who need to be rested for tomorrow, who's top of the list for you?
Oh, that's a tough. Well, it's hard because we don't know the ins and outs of who's banged up or who's playing through something or who might need it more. So, factor that into your equation then.
If those guys raise up the board for you,
yeah. So my initial thought is guys that we know are banged up. So Besser's had a few maintenance days, not missing games but missing practices. And Tockett admitted that there was one game where he was unsure if Besser was going to be able to play. So I would say Besser is one of those guys. I'd like Elias Lindholm since he's come back into the lineup, but if there's any lingering issues with that wrist problem that forced him to be sidelined there, then he could be a guy you could sit out. Elias Pettersson, I think, missed a practice a couple of weeks ago for maintenance. We've seen some maintenance for Quinn Hughes. So these are the kind of guys that I'm thinking about in terms of those conversations. But at the same time, for a guy like Hughes, who Tockett said today is feeling great and said he was feeling very good coming off the game against the Flames, like, you could play him and you could just play him like third pairing minutes, or you could not lean on him as heavily. You know, you don't have to play him 25 minutes a night or whatever, and you can still have him out there on the ice and get his reps in. The thing I'm surprised by more than anything, actually, is that they traveled everybody, or, you know, Tockett hinted that there was maybe one player that would stay at home. Like, to me, the benefit of not playing some of these guys in the Winnipeg game is also allowing them to sit at home and rest and recover and relax and not have to go on the flight to Winnipeg today and then return late tomorrow night after the game to Vancouver. So that was interesting to me, but yeah, that would be my initial thought, is if there are guys that are playing through stuff or banged up, then there's no reason to risk having anything go even worse by playing them in the game tomorrow.
Yeah, I just, you know, as much as you're right about the guys that are banged up and they are potentially the priority, for me, the benefit of resting guys tomorrow is prevention of injury. And yeah, the guys that are banged up could use that, but I don't want to see a world where Quinn Hughes takes a bruise, a knock or something like that, and he's slowed up in game one of the playoffs. And for me, it's like, with the bullet, it's Quinn Hughes to be the one that steps out of the lineup tomorrow.
Yeah, I could see that too. I could see why you'd put Miller in that conversation as well. The only thing I will say is that, you know, and this is not exactly me hyping up the game tomorrow, which you can listen to here on Sportsnet 650, 5 o'clock face-off, pregame at 4, and of course you guys will have the postgame show afterwards, but the Jets know who they're playing. The Canucks could very well know who they're playing and be locked into a series with Nashville by the time we get to puck drop tomorrow. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if this game is kind of a no-hitter, where both teams just want to get through it. Both teams want to stay healthy. Both teams probably don't want to play overtime because, you know, the Canucks have a flight to catch to get back home. So, you know, it's going to be more important for those guys that do get into the lineup. So the Nils Omans or the Mark Friedmans or the Noah Juulsens, for them to get some work on their timing and on game situations. For sure, I think you could take some of your top players out of the lineup or limit their minutes at the very least, because I think the Canucks, you know, they won't be able to sit all of their top guys, you know, with their salary cap constraints. I believe the maximum number of changes they can make is 4, right? There were 4 healthy scratches last night. No one's hurt right now. So you can, put those 4 players in the lineup, take 4 guys out. I don't think they have the cap room. I'm not a capologist, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think they have the cap room to call anybody up, even though they do still have 2 recalls available to them. Banged up guys, and then, yeah, your top guys for sure. Like, you don't want to risk Quinn Hughes falling into the boards accidentally and not being available for game one at the weekend, if that is indeed when they play.
You mentioned, Lindholm's come back and he's looked decent. There's a couple of guys that here recently in this last little stretch, while it hasn't been totally inspiring from the Canucks down the stretch here, they've done enough. And in talking with Yannick yesterday too, he felt like there's still questions that are left unanswered about this team going into the playoffs. I've got questions too, but I guess I'm just kind of talking this out with you here. My questions are more rooted in, I feel like we don't quite know what the potential and the ceiling is for this team. Whereas I look at other teams that are going to the playoffs, and it happens every year. You could do this thing and like, well, I got a lot of questions of what the validity of Toronto Maple Leafs' long-term run is going to be. Like, we've seen this saga for them before. I got a lot of questions about the Capitals, the Islanders, and maybe even the Predators. But I don't know if I have questions of the bottom falling out with the Canucks. Where are you at right now?
Yeah, I think the questions around the Canucks are rooted in their relative lack of playoff experience. So, like, my questions around the Canucks are not, are they a good team? Are they capable of going on a playoff run? Do they have the horses to get the job done in the postseason? Those are not my questions. My questions are, how will these guys that have not played in this situation respond to the change, right? Change in pressure. The games mean that much more. You know, do you squeeze your stick or do you get caught chasing because you're trying to make a difference and, you know, chase a hit that gets you out of position and you give up a goal? Or can you stay calm and composed and play the way that you have all year, which has allowed you to have success? How do you respond to the change in atmosphere? We all know what Rogers Arena gets like when it's game one of the playoffs and the towels are out, and, you know, that could be a big benefit to you. If you can, you know, harness that energy and channel it in the right way, it could also be a detriment if you can't channel that energy. And if you do feel the pressure, then what about going to play in a hostile building on the road in the playoffs? And if it is Nashville, like, that building gets loud, those fans have chants that they do. Like, it's kind of a soccer atmosphere there to a certain extent. How do you overcome, you know, that sort of hostile environment that none of these guys have experienced at this level to the degree that it can get to in the Stanley Cup playoffs? So to me, those are where all the questions come. It's not about what is this team capable of, because now we've seen over an 81 game sample size, they won 50 games. They've overcome some adversity. I think they've really tightened up defensively in the second half, in spite of the fact that the results have not been as strong since the All-Star break and the offense has quietened a bit. So if they can stick with that defensive structure, if they can be that team that they have been all year, if they get the goaltending that they have from Thatcher Demko for most of the season, and we know what he was able to do in the bubble as well, which was a different atmosphere, but there was some heightened pressure in those games. Like, those are not the things I worry about. It's about how do their top players meet the moment when the game is on the line and they need to score a goal or produce offense, and will they be able to do it in some of those crunch situations when the pressure is on with all of the focus on them in a Canadian market?
Talking to Brendan Batchelor here, voice of the Canucks on Sportsnet 650. You mentioned Thatcher Demko, just the one game in the return. But what did you like about what you saw from 35 and the return to form for him?
I liked that if you had showed me that game in a vacuum, I would have never known that it was his first back from injury.
Right.
Right? Like, he just picked up right where he left off. It was the same, you know, calm, cool, collected Thatcher Demko that made the saves he had to make and made a couple of really nice stops too on grade A chances, but for the most part didn't look bothered, didn't look like he was chasing the game, rarely looked uncomfortable. And the one goal that beat him was with a ton of traffic in front that tipped off his own defenseman. So, you know, that's exactly the Thatcher Demko that you hope to see. And even after the game, he was relatively self-critical, saying there were things that he wants to clean up, but from my eye, and I'm certainly not Kevin Woodley or a former goaltender or a goalie expert or anything like that, but, you know, that looked like prime Thatcher Demko to me, and that's very encouraging to see with the short runway that he's going to have here after having played against Calgary, and then based on what Rick Tocchet said today, we expect that he'll go in goal in Winnipeg tomorrow night as well.
And you know, what's funny, too, we were talking earlier about the, you know, some of the commentary that some players have made that they're not fearful of playing Vancouver. And while I dismiss some of that, like, what are players going to say? That they're going to admit fear days before the playoffs? Well, if you take it at face value, what's stunning is at some point you got to go up against Thatcher Demko. You might not respect or fear the 18 skaters in front of him, and sure, that's fine, but you're going to have to go through Thatcher Demko. That's what the most surprising part of those statements for me is going up against Demko.
The Canucks are like Rodney Dangerfield. They get no respect. And so, you know, which plays into the way this town likes to be in the playoffs, which is us against the world. So I'm sure the Canucks would say if teams aren't respecting us, good. That plays into our hands, and especially when you have a guy that could very well be a Vezina finalist this year. Sure, if teams don't respect you, great. That's exactly what you want, because then you want to be able to go in with a chip on your shoulder, and you want to be able to go in and catch teams by surprise. So I'll tell you this for sure. The Canucks will be very happy if the Nashville Predators or whoever they play in the first round don't take them as seriously as they might some of the other teams in the West, because we've seen what this team's capable of. And, you know, regardless of some of the offensive struggles, as I talked about already, they're one of the best defensive teams in the league. They have been very good down the stretch here in the second half, even if some of the results don't show it. And they've got an elite goaltender. And, you know, if you told me going into the playoffs that you had an elite defense and an elite goaltender, I would absolutely take that. And that's where the Canucks sit right now. So if teams disrespect them or don't believe in what they're capable of, that's, you know, the problem of their teams. And it'll be up to the Canucks to prove them wrong, which is a situation I'm sure they will relish.
Who's someone you're excited to watch in these playoffs for the Canucks? Like one particular player, if it's Joshua, maybe he takes on a Fernando Persani role or something like that, or just someone who might be a cult hero, because we've seen it here before. Like, hey, Tyler Mott did it in the bubble and rose to the occasion, and now fans still text to this day, hey, what's Tyler Mott up to? Can we sign Tyler Mott? Like, who's someone that you're excited to watch come playoffs?
Elias Lindholm. And
really,
here's the reason why, because there has been so much talk about how bad he's been since he arrived, and he had the injury, was out of the lineup, and they gave up all this, you know, all these assets to bring him in, and he hasn't lived up to the expectations of this fan base, certainly in terms of offensive production. I expect Elias Lindholm to be a game changer for this team in the playoffs, especially if he continues to play with Joshua and Garland, which is what we expect. Like, that line to me has the capability to be a line that changes the momentum in a series, that that is the reason why you win a tight game. If he can win a key faceoff for you, if they can shut down an opposition line, if they, you know, can get a good matchup on the road and give you some good minutes away from home. And I've been saying this for a while. I don't know if I've said it on the air, but I've definitely said it to a few people, that I kind of feel like Elias Lindholm is going to be that guy where there was all the negative publicity around him during the season, and he didn't play well after the trade, and people were disappointed. And he's likely not coming back next year. I think it's probably fair to say at this point, you know, that could change depending on how things work in terms of who the Canucks prioritize re-signing. But I could totally see Elias Lindholm being a guy who didn't have a great regular season, but comes in and is key for them in the playoffs, and maybe he scores a big goal at a big time, and then he'll leave in the summer, and people will be like, man, we could really use Elias Lindholm. Like, you know, it would be great to have him back in the fold, and all of the memories of criticizing his play down the stretch will go by the wayside. I think Lindholm is primed for a big postseason, and I'm excited to see what that line in particular can do, because I think that is the line that differentiates the Canucks from some of their opponents, and it's the line that has allowed them to sustain a lot of success this season. And, you know, albeit Lindholm hasn't been on that line for most of this year, but the fact that he's there now and his defensive profile, and the fact that even though he hasn't produced much as a Canuck, he does have a history of production, means that he could be a breakout performer for this team in the playoffs, in my mind.
I'll give you my guy, and look, I'm avoiding the Pettersons, the Millers, the Bessers, and Hugheses of the world. Just finding someone else, and you tell me if I'm crazy. I'm like weirdly interested to watch Ilya Mikheyev in the playoffs. If all these little plays and the speed and a poke here and a chip out there and tracking a puck, if all that stuff is supposed to matter in the regular season, it should be heightened in the playoffs. And I'm weirdly excited to watch Mikheyev in the playoffs.
Yeah, and here's the thing about Mikheyev. Like, I understand he's gotten some flack lately for not finishing chances, but, like, he's always been known as a guy that doesn't finish chances. But the things he does that coaches will appreciate or that will make a difference that may not make headlines or be the game-winning goal or you know, be focused on as the reason the Canucks win a game, it's all those little things. And again, like, I hate saying little things because we all think back to Louis Erickson, and that's the running joke, and it has been in this market. But now that this team is successful, you can look back on the year and you can say it's sort of an accumulation of little things that they did throughout the season that allowed them to have the success. And Mikheyev is one of those guys that he may not score a lot. He may not produce a lot of offense. He may not be ideally suited as a top six forward in an ideal world. He does little things throughout a game that change a game. And, you know, I agree. You know, he might not be the guy that pops up on the score sheet, but if we watch the game closely and if you talk to people that really understand the game, whether it be coaches or former players, they'll be able to tell you about the kind of impact that someone like Ilya Mikheyev can have. And then, you know what? He gets those chances too. He doesn't bury a lot of them, but all it takes is for him to bury one of those chances at one key moment for him to be a cult hero, as we've seen with plenty of guys in the history of this organization.
Hey, that's the end of the show. I don't know what just happened there at the end. We got disconnected and all things started to fall apart. But nevertheless, that is the end of the show. Sat and Dan on the way. I'll be back tomorrow in studio. Everything will run fine, and we'll have everything get set for the Canucks wrapping up the season. It's all coming up here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.